Hi, and welcome into the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy or Golf News Net as well at Golf News Net. You can find my work on golfnewsnet.com as well on Yahoo Sports' Devil Ball Golf blog. And you can also listen to GNN Radio through the TuneIn Radio app or on our website, golfnewsnet.com. It's been a little bit of a tough day today, but if you followed the news, you understand that Allison Parker and Adam Warder were murdered today in near Roanoke, Virginia, which isn't too far from where I live in the D.C. area. And they were murdered by a former employee, former reporter at the same station at which they worked, WDBJ, Channel 7 down there, the CBS affiliate. And they were murdered on live TV. And they were murdered in cold blood. And this coward, he filmed it and put it on the internet and took advantage of the fact that videos autoplay on those services to make the absolute most of what, and his deranged mind must have been his top moment, his peak performance, his most sensationalist. And that's extremely disturbing for me on so many levels as a reporter, for one, as a journalist. It's frightening to think that you can be in a situation that otherwise seems benign, completely assuming that there are no risks to showing up to a water park to talk to a Chamber of Commerce official about mini golf and water slides, and some psychopath with a gun and a vendetta and an altered mind comes and kills you on television, and the last act of your life, if you're the cameraman, is to get a shot of the bastard. And thank God that he did that. It created the awareness of who this guy was, his past, and to create an APB to look out for him and find him on Route 66 in Virginia as he was traveling toward the D.C. area. And police officers tried to initiate a traffic stop, and they got the guy to crash his Chevy Sonic rental car, which he'd had for the better part of a month, and had this thing set up. And he offed himself, or at least he tried. He failed initially and then died at Fairfax Area Hospital in Northern Virginia. It's frightening to think about that, just as a normal person, that someone could come up to you with a vendetta that you've wronged, or seemingly wronged, or not even wronged, that they just made it up in their head, and we'll find out more about that in the weeks to come, and kill you, and end it all, and shut it down, and do something sick with it. It's frightening to think about that. It's frightening to think that a friend of mine who literally moved into that area on Saturday to work as a sports anchor and reporter in that market, that's what he's subjected to on the first day of life in a new market. It's hard to think about. And I know that the reaction was very quick this morning on social media, and probably in all over the world, offline, people talking about this and the horrific nature of it. And then something seemed to happen, and I think it's worth discussing. So if you want to fast forward about 5 or 6 minutes until I talk to the golf, that's totally fine. I understand you can stop it here. But something stopped. The conversation seemed to stop after 15 minutes about the shooting, and then normal life resumed, or seemingly. And then as the gunman was identified and what he had done in posting it to social media was made aware, there was another flurry of shock and horror and disgust, not only at the guy, but what he did, and that social media sites like Twitter and Facebook weren't able to react fast enough to prevent thousands of people from seeing something so cold-blooded and awful and horrifying. And then 15 minutes or 30 minutes went by and went back to normal. And then when it was learned that the guy is on death's door, if not dead outright, reaction again, and then everything goes back to normal. We as a society, and we as people, we like distractions. I like distractions, you like distractions. We like to talk about golf because it's a distraction from the things that are hard in life, personally or more broadly. And when terrible things happen, the natural impulse is to stop for a second and just say, what a terrible thing. I'm sad that it happened to somebody else, and I'm so glad it didn't happen to me or someone that I love. And then you genuflect for 2 minutes, and apparently you just go back to tweeting and Facebooking whatever the hell inane shit you were going to otherwise put up there and put out to the world. And we don't stop and think for longer than a few minutes at a time anymore. In a time where in this country we're averaging 1 to 2 mass shootings a day, the number of mass shootings in this country has increased tremendously. For whatever reason, even while broader crime has gone down over the last 25 years, and we can't seem to figure out what the hell to do about it. And we can't acquiesce that there needs to be a solution, and we need to do better. And it's not just, if you're a liberal like me, it is not just gun control. It isn't just taking guns away or making it harder to get guns. It is part that, and for Republicans who say you can't stop people like this, maybe not in the moment. Once they've gotten that far, once they're at the scene of the crime, it's too late. But we can prevent people with mental health issues like this guy from getting a gun in his hands if we figure out how to identify them and make sure that it's notated somewhere in the world that if this guy wants a gun, he may do something terrible with it, and that we should deny him that right because of that reason. And not just deny him the Second Amendment access to a gun, but to then give him the opportunity to receive better mental health care and better support day to day from a community of people that want this guy to be a fully functioning member of society. And we need to offer those services. We need to do better at coming up with markers for people who maybe you're suffering from too much stress. They're at their breaking point. Maybe they've always had problems and just they've been really good at making it look normal for all these years. I don't think that a lot of people had a sense that this guy was going to do this. So that's to say, to have even the brightest shrink in the room at every marketplace, at every business, wouldn't necessarily have been able to figure out this guy. But just because we can't solve everyone and we can't solve every bad thing doesn't mean we should stop trying. Doesn't mean we should be desensitized to it. It doesn't mean that it's okay. We as a society value freedom. We talk about it on both sides, the freedom to do the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. But we can't pursue those things if we're dead. And if we create a society where the freedom belongs to the killers and to the people who have access to hurt and maim and destroy. And if we don't decide together that there's some middle ground that is effective, then we're going to become a nation where this thing happens not just once a day, but twice a day, 3 times a day. And I struggled with this morning, thinking about this because of the social media nature of this attack, and that this jerk, this coward, knew that what he was doing would be seen by millions, and that by posting what he did to Facebook and Twitter, that he hoped to reach the maximum audience possible for his grotesque behavior, even if he knew it was going to mean he was going to die. That's exactly how ISIS raises up. That's exactly how terrorist organizations get people, because they use social media to connect with people they otherwise never would have found. This guy couldn't have committed this crime, not in the same way that he did 15 years ago. Because this viral nature of it wouldn't have existed. It would have happened slowly in one market and then in Roanoke, and then it would have proliferated over the course of a day or two or three to finally understand what this guy was doing and what the intent was and all of that. But instead, within just minutes, he can have an incredible reach and effect and horrify and scare and do just make people feel terrible in just the blink of an eye. Because it's the viral nature of our world, that we're more connected than ever, and because we're more connected than ever, it makes it easier to scare the shit out of everybody more than ever. It makes it easier to do sensationalist things and get attention for them. That's why the Kardashians are popular. That's why ISIS stormed social media. That's why attention whoring is the thing to get attention. That's why Donald Trump retweets people who tweeted him calling Megyn Kelly a bimbo. Because social media makes it possible to have a bullhorn when you have the voice of a mouse. When you have the voice of a coward. It makes you seem stronger than you really are. And while I love social media, and I love that I have a business based on it, and technology, and connecting with people that otherwise would not read me without a ton of money and a whole lot of newsprint, it's disturbing to think that there is that alternative side. That alternative to the bullhorn, that you can broadcast horror to the world and do it with a smile on your face because you know you're going to get everybody. And I don't know how we reconcile that. I don't know how we make it safer or better or make sure these kinds of people just don't connect with the world. I think we're still struggling with that question. I think that the Twitters and Facebooks of the world are still struggling with that question. And they don't want to censor. They don't want to limit speech. I understand. It's a valuable freedom. But we've got to strike a balance. And I don't know what that answer is. I'm not trying to offer an answer today. But I think it's worth taking more than 20 minutes to think about it and trying to have a conversation with the person next to you and just come to common ground. Something. Anything. Beer you like. Golf course you like to play, rock, paper, scissors, whatever it is, that if we're going to be a connected world, it should be on friendlier terms. If we're going to be a disconnected world, then that doesn't matter. But that's not changing anytime soon. So if we're going to be this interconnected world where everything is smaller and almost everybody is within a tweet's reach, then we need to start treating each other a little bit better and taking more care of each other. Because now we're a global neighborhood. We're not a block party anymore. We are a global party that has to figure out how to work with each other and do the best for each other. And that doesn't mean a nanny state. That doesn't mean buoying everything up and shielding people from offensive things and being politically correct and making sure everybody is happy all the time. I don't mean that. But I do mean that we need to be able to lay the foundation for each other so that we are mentally healthy, feel like we're somewhat integrated and accepted into society, and that our core beliefs that make us human, not make us liberal or conservative, Catholic, Jewish, Muslim, atheist, whatever, but that the core beliefs of being human, that you want to be happy and you want to be free, that we can ensure that, and that we can ensure people are healthy and have a good life. And if we can't do that, out. I'm out. And I don't want to be a part of a world that's like that. And I don't think anybody else wants to be either. So we need to just do me a favor and take 5 minutes today and just think about holding the door for somebody or asking how someone is genuinely when you run into them at a Starbucks and you don't know them. You know, it's that simple kind of stuff that we do so flippantly and take advantage of that if done right, maybe lays the groundwork for someone not showing up to a 6:45 live television shoot and killing two people, attempting to kill a third in cold blood. I'm sorry for that rant. I'm not sorry. Actually, I'm tired of apologizing for things like this. I'm not sorry for that rant. That's a conversation we deserve to have, whether it's about golf or whether you hear something else today. I need to be able to pivot, man. And when people tell me, stay on golf, just stick to golf, don't talk about anything else, whether that means pro wrestling, politics, or this, we're people. We've got to have this conversation. And it may be uncomfortable, and it may be from a weird place, but you have as much perspective as I do. And we should have that talk. And so should other people. And I hope we continue to have it, because we still haven't had it genuinely yet. And as someone said to me in response to a tweet today, if the gunning down of 20 children in Newtown didn't do it, what do you think this is going to do? And I don't know. I wish I knew, and I wish this was the point where we'd put pencils down and go, we've had enough, and we do something. And we do something not just on political lines, But we do something for people, not for show. It's going to be a hard pivot into golf, but we're going to try here because the FedEx Cup playoffs start this week. And they start at the Barclays at Plainfield Country Club in Edison, New Jersey. This golf course hosted the first leg of the FedEx Cup 4 years ago, and it was shortened to 54 holes on a Saturday finish because Hurricane Irene was coming into the coast. Flooded the golf course, did a hell of a lot of damage, but Dustin Johnson got out of there with the victory. Matt Kuchar finished second, and two of those guys are principal figures going into the FedEx Cup playoffs. Obviously, the leaders, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day is in there. So is Rory McIlroy, Bubba Watson, Jimmy Walker, other guys who have had great years, and a lot of them are playing golf in addition to the likes of Justin Rose and Brooks Koepka, who have been in the top six each in their last three starts. It's really a great time to be a golf fan, and these playoffs probably should be some of the best that we've ever had. And we're entering, what, year 9 of the playoffs, starting in 2007. So this is the 9th time we'll have done this. And last year was fascinating with Billy Horschel winning twice and picking up career wins 2 and 3 to pick up the FedEx Cup and $10 million, win $13 million in a couple of tournaments, which is kind of unbelievable. And, we had it a couple years ago with Henrik Stenson resurrecting his career. We had it with Bill Haas winning from the water. We had it with Jim Furyk capping off a 3-win season with what was probably the most important moment in his career other than the 2003 U.S. Open. It's the FedEx Cup has proven, at least in the last several years, to be either a surprise story or a story of redemption. And I like that. I know that the intent of the series was to try and get the best guys to the finish to square off against each other with all the marbles on the line. But that doesn't seem to have worked out that way since really 2009 when Phil won the Tour Championship and Tiger won the FedEx Cup anyway. And I think that there's room for that right now. There are so many great players in the sport, and so many of them go under-recognized. I mean, how many shots of Brooks Koepka's did you see at the PGA Championship? Hell, the Wyndham Championship. 6? I don't know. And how many were live? 1? 2? The guy gets no respect at all right now, at least from CBS cameras. And we haven't seen enough of him on NBC events, so we get 3 of the next 4, 3 in a row after this one of NBC. We'll see if they decide to pivot toward Brooks Koepka. But you've got other guys that are young guys in the playoffs. You've got Justin Thomas, who is still trying to figure out how to play Sundays better, but he's going to get there. And I'm just really looking forward to the playoffs. I think it's going to be really good. I don't have a prediction for you who's going to win. You can see the picks on golfnewsnet.com, the fantasy picks I do each week. We do a top 10 there each Tuesday, and we do some sleepers as well for the bigger events, so we're going to do those. But I think it's worthwhile to take a look at those. But I think regardless of who wins, if you're a fantasy geek or not, we're going to get a great playoffs, and it starts this week. So we drop 25 spots, 25 guys after this week. So we go from 125 to 100 for the Deutsche Bank Championship, Labor Day weekend, TPC Boston, Norton, Mass. Skip a week, dark week. BMW Championship starts with the top 70 after the Deutsche Bank Championship. And then from there at Conway Farms after that, we had no cut. Then you drop 40 more and you get to the final 30 who will go to East Lake for the Tour Championship. So that's the layout of the playoffs. If you haven't heard this before, I'd be surprised. But I know there's been an argument out there for a while about, and I've made this argument in fact, that the FedEx Cup should conclude with some kind of match play. And I like the argument because I love match play. And I love watching guys play each other one-on-one. It's faster, it's more compelling, it's easier to envelop yourself in a two-person match or a four-person match, a four-ball type match, than to try and keep track of 156 guys or 125 guys at one time to see who everyone's moving up and down. It's always changing. The action's so much in front of you in match play, I think it makes compelling theater. But I think I'm going to distance myself from that argument. And I will distance myself from that argument because I think that you play the entire season with the exception of the WGC match play, now the Dell match play, in stroke play. I mean, that's the year. I mean, and although the modified Stableford at the Barracuda, So those are the only two events that aren't 72-hole stroke play. So to all of a sudden say at the end, hey, wait, the rules have changed, the game has changed, I don't know if I agree with that. So I'll make it a slightly tweaked proposal. And that is the 30 guys should start the Tour Championship. And that should be the reward for a great season. You get into three major championships, the first three of the year, by virtue of doing that. And from there, you then start eliminating guys round by round. So you go from 30 on day one, you cut down to, I don't know, this is like the old ADT championship format, if you're an LPGA fan, where they used to have, I think, slightly less players. It might have even been 30. But you go from 30, you play the first 36, and you cut it down to, say, 15. And you have 15 players left for the weekend. And then from 15 players, you cut it down to 8. And then those final 8 players go off in 4 groups on Sunday to decide the Tour Championship. Now, it could be up to you whether you would think it would be a better idea for all 4 rounds to count together aggregate. They tried that in the ADT once. Or for just each segment to count. So you have 2 rounds, a cut, 1 round counts, the cut, 1 round, get a winner. I'd be fine with that too. But I think then that way you create a true playoff situation where you're cutting down guys at the Tour Championship, but you're not changing the format to the point that it throws itself in the face of everything you've done for the entire year. And it means that not necessarily the best players will get there, but that in that situation, you're more likely, especially if you do the aggregate format where the first 54 holes are really the total counting for the end. If you do that, then you're still very likely to get the best players in the world, or at least the best players in that field, to get to the final day. And then from there, you decide who wins the $10 million bucks. One round, or, you know, aggregate 4 rounds, but one round with the 8 players to win. I think that would be a good change, because it's better than having to worry about all the permutations of points. For the average fan, I think the FedEx Cup in the first 2 weeks really doesn't mean all that much, because you don't get the sense that the guys who are less than really 75th are going to make it to the end, unless they win or have 2 very good finishes in a row. And it doesn't really start to get real until you get to the 70. So these first 2 events are often a reward for the guys who had solid years, or good years, or competent years, whatever you want to label it, but really aren't going to make it there. They're not going to make it to Atlanta, barring a huge opportunity seized and they win the tournament, or back-to-back seconds, or that kind of thing, you know? So I think you could keep those things exactly the same. No one would mind. Same thing with the BMW Championship. I think people love that tournament because that's the big cut down, and it's a no-cut cut down. So, but fans are mostly in tune with the top 30. So if you skate by in the top 60 or so for the first 2 events, then it gets to be interesting for the BMW. So once you get to that top 30, you've identified the 30 guys who have had the best year. And if you want to make it a true playoff, and you want to make some element of volatility into it, but make the Tour Championship count, then you've got to go this route where each round is a tournament unto itself. It's a segment unto itself. And then you go from there and identify a champion that way. Still could be volatile. I mean, you could have guys 23 through 30 be the 8 players, but at least you don't have to worry about this guy has this many points, and if he finishes in first because he's 24th, he needs the following people to finish 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th, respectively, and then he can win. Just eliminate all that crap and make it as simple to understand as possible. You can leave the other 3 events as convoluted to get, because there's some drama there. There are enough players to make it interesting. There's enough room for leaps and bounds to people can get their head around it, but they don't have to get too deep into the weeds. Once you're down to 30 guys, there are so many names into the weeds. So many scenarios. I mean, if you saw the media notes, and I copied them last year and shared them with you, and I think I did the last 2 years on Golf News Net, The media notes for the scenario for how to win the FedEx Cup is the same every year. If you're first, it's this. If you're second, it's this. Third, it's this. Top five guys, if you win the FedEx Cup. Everybody else needs some help, but varying degrees of help, and then it gets slightly more complicated each way you go. So, for me, that's not fun, because then I'm just looking up, like, okay, well, if he's here, then have the following boxes been checked? Can he win? If no, go back here, and then you see who can win, who's been eliminated. And I don't get that much enjoyment out of it. So I think it needs to be a little bit simpler. So far, FedEx likes it. They came on board for a second contract, so they can't be too concerned about how convoluted it is. But I'd be interested to hear what you think about it. I think most people enjoy the playoffs because the golf is good. They may not understand how the hell the FedEx Cup works, but the golf is good, so they'll take it. Do you understand the FedEx Cup? Do you care to understand the FedEx Cup? I guess that's my question, and I'm curious to hear your answer. So tweet me at Ryan Ballingy, or you can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, if you still do that, and let me know what you think. Love to hear about it. Rory McIlroy is not playing this week in the first leg of the playoffs. He's in the top 10 overall. He's had a great season, 2 wins. He's only played 9 times. So, because of injury, it's okay. He doesn't have to deal with the restriction of playing 15 times. He hasn't applied for the medical exemption, but because he was clearly injured, he's okay. So he can get through all 4 legs of the playoffs pretty much scot-free. So why not just skip this one? There's no reason to put any extra stress on that ankle. Sergio Garcia skipped, and 2 other guys skipped. Francesco Molinari and Retief Goose. Now, both those folks are dealing with family situations. Molinari's wife is pregnant with their second child. Goose had an undisclosed family issue. Garcia didn't explain why he's not playing, but he's got a good chance, as anybody that's not already in the final top 30, to get in the top 30 and make it to East Lake. I'm fine with all of those. I don't think it slights the tournament in any way. I think the reality of it is that if you're in the top 30, especially in the top 15, you feel really good about your chance to get to East Lake unless some weird stuff happens. So I think if you're in your top 5, you're already there. I don't know what the exact number is, but that's pretty much the argument at this point. So, I don't think that there's any slight to the field by having just 121 guys and one to play, and Lou Eustace pulled out. He's got a back problem, so 120 are playing. Jason Day and Dustin Johnson pulled out of the Pro-Am today. Day with a back issue, Dustin Johnson with overall sickness. Again, they're just trying to rest up. This is a long run, 4 tournaments in 5 weeks for these guys, so don't read anything into that. And we'll see how they do this week, and I'm sure they'll play fine enough, and if they don't, they're really not worried because they're going to get to the end anyway. The really intriguing part of this for this year, to me, other than to see who's playing great will win this thing in the end, or someone else entirely, is if Hunter Mahan can keep up the streak of being the only guy to get to the Tour Championship in every year of the FedEx Cup concept. It's not even close right now. He needs some help. And I think that's probably going to be the streak that comes to an end this year, ending the run of guys who have been able to make it to East Lake every year. So I'm curious. That's kind of my big storyline for the first few weeks, is where's Hunter Mahan, and see if he can improve his stature. I'll be really interested to see that. So we may actually talk to him next week for something related to a sponsor thing that he's doing. We may not do that, but if we do, we'll let you know. We'll put it up on golfnewsnet.com, and it'll also be on GNN Radio for you next week. So that's it for this week's show. Again, I hope not that you enjoyed, but that you dealt with and were willing to hear me out on the WDBJ-related conversation, and that 15 minutes of golf talk is worth it if we can have 10 minutes of real conversation together and do it every once in a while. It's not going to be a regular thing for those of you that are new to this show and are probably thinking about hitting the unsubscribe button right now, but every once in a while it's worth talking about something serious that's not golf, so I hope you understand. Please give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you feel that's valid. Leave some comments in there too if you have a question for us. Leave in the reviews with a 5-star, and we'll love you forever, and we'll answer them on the air. If not, you can follow me on Ryan Ballingy. I take your fantasy questions all the time, as well as your other complaints and whining. Or if you actually have something nice to say, that would be pretty cool too. Some guy called me a bald asshole the other day on Twitter, and sometimes I am a bald asshole. So sometimes that's deserved, but don't start a fight and then expect me to take it. Just take it. So anyway, until next week when we have 25 guys eliminated from the FedEx Cup playoffs, we move to the Deutsche Bank Championship with the top 100, and we have a sense of who's going to be in the Web.com Tour Finals. I'm Ryan Balogi saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week on the 19th Hole Golf Show.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.